What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 160 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined for the 160th time. Yes, he will not leave me alone and let me do a show by myself just once. He won't let me do it. It is the king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
You know, it would probably be tough to do a solo show now that you mention it.
It would be very tough.
I mean, you talk quite a bit. It's very possible you could pull it off.
Guilty as charged. I'm not even going to try to deny that. How's your weekend, sir?
Weekend was all right, John. I mean, I got to see, for those of you out there, I know most of you are gaming and esports pros. At the same point, I got to jump into the XFL, John, the new sport craze right now. Tackle football, that's not the NFL. It was lots of fun. I went to the DC Defenders game here in DC at Audi Field, DC United Stadium. It was tons of fun. It's really exciting to see how they're implementing those new rule changes, similar to some of the rule changes we'll talk about today in esports.
And you bought season tickets, I believe, or yeah?
I did. I was actually encouraged by that guy there in front of that South Korean flag.
Yeah, I mean,
the deals were just really good. It was like $100, $150 for season tickets.
And you're sitting next to that same guy, right? That's kind of a shame.
I am.
Right?
Though he was a no-show for game one.
I was a no-show for game one. I do apologize. Sorry, I got something in my eye there. No-show for game one. I had other commitments that I had to attend to, which is okay. It's okay. It's fine. We got four more home games to the Defenders, so I'm really excited about that. Joey, I don't know if you're a pop culture kind of person or not, but this past weekend was the Oscars, the Academy Awards, and much like in gaming and esports, South Korea dominated this past weekend. Parasite taking home four awards, including Best International Film, Best Original Screenplay, Best Director, and Best Picture. So not only do I get bragging rights for winning my family's Oscar pool that we do every year, I am celebrating nonstop. If you have not seen Parasite, this is going to be your one non-esport PSA real quick. Go see Parasite. You know, assuming you know you're all gamers and you're into anime also, it's super simple. Subtitles, you know how to read them and watch what's going on. Totally worth the 2 hours to watch the movie. It is absolutely fantastic. And yes, I am celebrating, Joey, and we'll get to that celebration a little bit later on. But first, I want to remind all of our friends and listeners to make sure they follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And you can find us at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, give Joey a follow for all of his latest XFL hot takes at Courtside King. And you can follow myself, Fiasco, for all of my Oscar hot takes, including criticizing everyone who couldn't get over the fact Parasite was subtitled, at Fiasco if you're watching here live on Twitch. Those beautiful mugshots you're currently staring at right below there, those are our handles. Make sure you follow us on social media as well as the show. And Nation, one last request, a small, tiny request. We would give you a virtual hug if we could, if you would leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher of choice, or all your favorite podcatchers of choices. We're, the Level Up Podcast is now available on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Reviews do go a long way to helping grow the show and reach new listeners. So when you do have a moment and you would like to earn that virtual hug, we would appreciate you taking a small bit of time out of your day to leave us a review. Joey, there's a lot in this episode. I'm not even going to try to give some kind of a teaser because it's so action-packed. Joey, I want you to break it down for Level Up Nation. What are we talking about today on episode 160?
Now, John, it is a packed episode, but it's nowhere near as packed as last week where we went almost an hour and a half. It will be much shorter than that for our listeners, for editors, for anyone out there, Level Up fans alike. But we are covering some big things, John. Flashpoint is one of the biggest ones, and that is the new CSGO scene, that rumored Site B out there that Monte Cristo and Thorin were working on. We now have a name. We now have more details, so we'll be diving into that. On top of that, we also have a lot of other action based on earning reports. We are diving into Ubisoft's earning report as well as Activision Blizzard. We're going to look at some of those games that are going to be coming out that are already announced, as well as some of the hints that they gave us in those earning reports of what is to come. But that's not all, John. We are also diving into esports because there was a ton that happened this past weekend. Overwatch League kicked off. CDL moved into its second week. We have LEC and LCS action as well. And last but not least, right here in Washington, D.C., the Caps Gaming Showcase enters its next form in the eight. We are down to the final eight, John. This tournament started with so many teams, and we are into the Elite Eight of the Caps Gaming Showcase, so we're excited to talk about that as well.
Tons of esport happenings in the world. Joey, I know you said it's not as bad as episode 159 was in terms of content, but I still feel like there's a lot on our plate here, so we're going to need a little bit of assistance. And of course, I am in reference to the time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. Of course, I am talking about the drink of choice, Joey, for the 160th time, your beverage that's going to aid you through this amazing episode.
John, there was still some bourbon in the barrel, so we're going with some Woodford Reserve again tonight. And I'm once again going no ice. I like the Stones. They worked well last week. They chilled the beverage but not watered it down. So we're staying classy.
Joey, I am still on my kick in celebration of Parasite winning Best Picture and taking home a total of four Oscars last night. I stayed up until 11:30 watching this. A good friend of mine who currently lives in Busan came back and visited during Christmas. She was nice enough to smuggle in four bottles of Korean-grade soju. Now, I say that because the soju we get here in America is incredibly watered down in comparison to what they actually have in Korea. So, Joey, I'm going to be celebrating. I apologize ahead of time for you, sir. Blueberry soju. So I will be sipping on this throughout the entire show, and I have to be careful on which way I hold my shot glass because there is something not very PG-friendly on the other side of the shot glass. So, Joey, to episode 160, to the Level Up podcast, and to some amazing topics. So I'm going to toss it off to you for the Give Me an Esport News segment, and I'm going to go ahead and down this lovely shot of soju for you.
Wow, like a field of blueberries all in one sip.
Beautiful. It's all gone. It's great.
Absolutely. But you know what is not gone, John? That is the Golden Guardians' chances in the Super Smash Bros. Melee scene because they are picking up a new player. They are entering the arena. They are picking up Zane, the Genesis 7 champion. I really like this move. When you look at Super Smash Brothers, again, it's not the largest scene out there, but it is a very popular scene. It continues to get feedback and continue to grow based on the feedback from those players, from those that support the scene. And if you look at like cult followings as far as scenes go, none are bigger than Super Smash Brothers Melee.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great for Golden Guardians. You know, if you're a fan of Golden Guardians, I know we have one fan of the Level podcast that's a diehard Golden Guardians fan. Not sure why, but their league team is kind of struggling, but if you're a fan of the overall organization, a pickup like Zane in this sense for a Super Smash is a super awesome pickup move for them. And it's great for the Smash scene, but it's also even better for Golden Guardians as they continue to kind of grow. And I'm not going to call it a rebranding, but they're still kind of testing the waters in other titles out there. So I like this move by Golden Guardians.
Right. And I mean, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I believe this is Golden Guardians' first jump outside of League of Legends. Because right now, they have their fancy rebrand, they have the new-looking logo, it's nice, it's fresh, it's clean. The League of Legends team not looking so clean so far in the Rift this season. But once again, now they're branching out, they're starting to look into other esports scenes. I don't believe they're in any other ones yet, but I love the fact that they are starting to make those moves, starting to acquire those players, starting to breathe out and expand their breadth, really, of the esports scene. And for those of you who don't know, the Golden Guardians is owned by the Warriors. So the winning Warriors of the NBA from a couple years ago, that team that went on a run and just continued to win the NBA title time after time. Now they're here, now they're back, and they are ready to go. Gears Esports, so NRG, the team that jumped in, they had that funky rebrand, but then they're trying to dive into new esports scenes. They bought into Gears of War as their next big esports scene with the release of Gears 5. They picked up a very highly touted roster led by Thy Ashes. Now they're looking back at that scene and saying, maybe this isn't the scene for us, and they've decided to move on. The team that they did acquire will continue to compete, but they are looking for a new organization to support them. Overall, I'm curious to see NRG's next move here. We've seen them jump into a lot of esports scenes. We've seen them jump out of a lot of esports scenes. They recently sold their CSGO squad. They recently dropped their Gears of War roster. We've seen them jump out of League of Legends. So at this point, they're still in a few esports, and they have some big ones under their title. For example, the San Francisco Shock in the Overwatch League. But at the same point, what is their next objective? Are they just sticking with these franchise leagues? Are they done with these smaller scenes? Or are we going to continue to see NRG maybe eventually buy back in?
Yeah, NRG is kind of a unique situation in the world of esports at the moment. I don't want to say it's a tale of an organization that expanded too quickly, because that seems to be the downfall of a lot of organizations where they try to dip into too many titles at once, and then you start to hear those nightmare stories about organizations not being able to pay their players, pay their staff members, and it's a complete nightmare for esports in general. I'm not going to go and say that's what NRG did, but they have struggled a little bit, and they were kind of hoping with that rebranding they're going to kind of bounce back. You see a lot of teams and organizations in traditional sports, when they do a full rebrand, it's to signal a change in the culture, to signal a major change in that organization going forward. Unfortunately, a lot of esport organizations have made some really bad rebranding choices. I'm going to go and throw NRG in there. I'm not a huge fan of their rebranding, and you know, some of their moves have been questionable. Leaving Gears, you know, Joey, I know we've talked about Gears quite a bit, and we see the potential there, but the biggest hurdle they're going to have is that gore and violence factor. Is that going to be able to go mainstream? Is that going to be able to be shown on Disney and ABC and ESPN like an Overwatch League is? Granted, yeah, it's still violent, but it doesn't have that same amount of gore that we see in Gears. So it makes sense for organizations to pull out of Gears because of that major hurdle. But for an organization like NRG that's kind of treading water at the moment, it'll be kind of interesting to see, like you said, Joey, what their next move is going to be, because that's really going to be the make or break move for them.
Right. And when you look at the Gears acquisition in general, I feel like they came in with one of these very highly touted rosters. They were expecting a good piece of that prize pool tournament after tournament, and so far this roster has not delivered to that level. I don't know what the initial investment was, but I have a feeling the fact that they bought this highly touted roster, they're not delivering, and the scene itself, it's shown growth, but it's not showing exponential growth. Those factors altogether, I think, are probably the reason we see NRG dropping out here. With that being said, because of these other dropouts that we've seen in other scenes like CSGO, like Gears Now, what are we expecting from them next? Are they only going with Overwatch League because it's franchise? Are they only going with Rocket League because they've won here and there? I'm very curious for NRG as a brand in general. They have so many huge people buying in with investments. I mean, I believe it's Alex Rodriguez invest in NRG. I think J-Lo invest in NRG. Lots and lots of huge athletes and actresses and actors out there and big names in general investing in this company, investing in this esports brand, yet it just fails to deliver outside of some of these other leagues, some of these major franchise leagues. So I'm very curious to see how this goes. Again, I don't know how the rebrand got through in the first place, especially with so many big personalities out there that have branded themselves so well. A lot of question marks around NRG for me right now. One of the few that is not a question mark, though, John, is the San Francisco Shock. They have absolutely been killing it. And with that transition over to the Overwatch League, let's take a look at our very own Washington Justice here in D.C., because we have some sad news today. Due to extenuating circumstances, this visa crisis has struck again. We talked about it last week in League of Legends with Broxah and Team Liquid, with Crown and his team as well, but it's now hitting Overwatch League once again. This time, Lulshish is the victim. He is no longer expected to begin the season with the Washington Justice in the Overwatch League season due to visa issues. So again, he was picked up by the Justice last year. They're still working through all this visa stuff that has to be done because of the way the United States operates with the way they view esports players. So again, he is still on the roster. He's still a Washington Justice player, but he may not be there for their initial kickoff this upcoming weekend at the Philadelphia homestand. So pour one out for Lulshish, pour one out for Justice and the Justice fans. We're hoping that he'll be here soon. Hopefully he makes it this weekend on a miracle visa approval, I guess. Joey, but at the same point, it's not looking very likely at the moment.
A miracle and the U.S. government, not going to happen. The sad part about this is, this was probably one of the bigger reasons as to why, you know, Lulshish wasn't able to play last split. Also, was, you know, they just weren't going to be able to get the visas in time. They had the entire off season, and we still can't get this done. This is a major, major issue. You know, Joey, you said it. Last week we talked on with League of Legends, the big thing being that the Academy player couldn't get a visa because they didn't see that as, you know, top tier esports. Well, Overwatch League is considered a top tier esports. So I want to know what is the reasoning behind Lulshish not being able to get his visa in this case? Because we can't say It's because Overwatch League isn't a top-tier entertainment slash sport slash competition like what we had last week with an Academy player for League of Legends. You know, something had to have broken down here. And I'm going to put all the blame on the U.S. government on this, because the way they have handled esport visas for about the last year and a half, 2 years, has been an absolute disaster. You know, we've talked about Germany kind of really leading the way. Of course, Europe leading the way when it comes to esport visas, you know, and even Asian countries doing it, you know, are really taking esports to heart and paying a lot of attention to it, because they see the profit. They see the value. It's like almost any other entertainment industry out there. You know, if a musical act shows up to Berlin, people are going to travel from all over Europe to go to Berlin to see a musical act. Same thing with esports. When you hold a championship in Paris, people from Germany, Italy, Poland, Russia, the UK are all going to travel to Paris for this event. Same thing here in the US. You hold an event in New York. You know what, Joey? DC's only 5 hours, is a 5 hour drive away from New York. People are going to come up from DC. They're going to come down from Boston. They're coming over from Ohio. People will travel. That's tourism money. It makes no sense for the US government to be this far behind the ball when it comes to esports and that P1 visa. It's a thorn in the side of esports that shouldn't really be there. This is something that can easily be taken care of if the U.S. government actually functioned for a change.
Now, this is not a political podcast.
It's not. It has everything to do with esports, though. I didn't go anywhere else.
Right, 100%. And we hit on this a lot last week. We really dove into the issues that are going on in this area. Again, it's sad seeing victim after victim, especially a victim that really affects us here in Washington, D.C., being a bit biased, wanting that Justice roster to succeed very well. I mean, with that being said, John, this team is very strong. I think Roar is going to step in as a very good replacement. I'm assuming he's going to be the replacement, at least as that main tank role. So I'm curious to see how the Justice adjusts to this. With that being said, they probably had an idea ahead of time that this visa might not pass in time. So hopefully some of those practices have been taking place with Roar or Tuba or whoever they put in that spot. Now, with that being said, that does wrap us up for roster moves. Not a ton this week. We do have that new blood there with the Golden Guardians jumping into the Smash Brothers Melee scene with Zayn. Energy sadly departing Gears, and then the Overwatch League move here with Lulshish. This might not be the only visa that gets delayed as well, John. I haven't seen many others because a lot of the players are returning players, but those newer players, everyone can be a victim of this visa issue. Lulshish may not be the only one out there. Moving over to partnerships and investments, this first one is exciting. The UAE USA United, and that is the United Arab Emirates and the United States, their embassy here in the United States, have signed on as the presenting partner of the Capitals Gaming Esports Tournament. And we don't know 100% what this tournament is. It could be this upcoming one. It could be a different tournament. There's a whole lot of speculation going on right now about this, but that's not the only thing they're jumping onto, John. They're also signing on to sponsor the MSE Weekly Esports Show as well, which is distributed on the Monumental Sports Network channels. I'm super excited about this. I think there's a whole lot of different angles to take with this piece in general, but one in particular is the Olympics piece. When you look at esports, there's so much discussion about the Olympics right now. Now you have an embassy buying into something that's esports hockey related with the CHEL competitions that the Capitals are putting on. This could be that next step forward for possible esports in the Olympics or in major competitions worldwide.
Yeah, and not only that, take a look at this partnership and where this partnership directly affects. It's going to affect here in the U.S., and also in the UAE, the Middle East. That's an area where a lot of people are trying to move into when it comes to esports. We talk about all the time with esports trying to reach into different parts of Asia. You know, we've talked about, you know, the Indian subcontinent, you know, going into India. We've talked about Turkey. We've talked about different areas in Europe and Asia. And the Middle East has kind of always been an area people have wanted to move into, but has really kind of slowly developed in comparison to other areas of the world. This partnership has the opportunity to really make some headway here. Now, as a reminder, Monumental Sports Entertainment, they're also co-owners of Team Liquid. So they're heavily invested in Team Liquid. They just opened like it just happened the other day. No, it's been open for a while now. The beautiful Alienware Training for Center in Santa Monica, California. They're about to open one in Europe. Who knows? Maybe this partnership will create an Alienware training facility in the UAE. That would be absolutely fantastic. And the biggest nugget here, Joey, you know, we don't know 100% what this means, but I have a feeling they phrased it this way on purpose. the presenting partner of ACAPS Gaming Esports Tournament. Now, you know, if you're following along, the CAPS Gaming Esports, the CAPS Gaming Showcase is really the first 6v6, you know, esport for NHL, for NHL 20, for CHEL, as the community calls it. And it's huge. It's on a major, major scale. They had almost 100 teams sign up for it. You know, that's 6 players per team. We're talking close to 600 players signed up for this tournament. They're in the knockout rounds. They're down to the they're down to the quarterfinals, the final 8. Final 8 teams, 4 teams are going to be coming to DC. Leidos is the presenting partner. Leidos is a defense contractor based out of here in the Northern Virginia area. So to me, when I read this press release, I'm going, okay, of ACAPS Gaming Esport event. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not this current one. But with the way MSE has been so gung-ho with esports and CAPS Gaming and the whole CHEL community with this whole 6v6 format, it would not surprise me to see another version of a 6v6, maybe a 3v3. Joey, we got to call the 3v3 CHEL Classic last year. And that was absolutely fun. You know, it was more of an arcade style, but it was still a lot of fun. A lot of viewers, a lot of people had a ton of fun. Who knows what this could mean, but the one thing it does sound like is we're going to get more CAPS Gaming and more CAPS CHEL action, hopefully in the future.
Yes, sir, and I think you hit on the major points there. If it was going to be the CAPS Gaming Showcase, I think it would have said a CAPS Gaming Showcase sponsor. With it not saying that, I think it does leave it open for that speculation. It purely says a CAPS Gaming Tournament, so it leaves it open. What could it be? Could it be another 6v6? Could it be that 3v3 action we saw before? It could be a 1v1 action like the CHEL World has been used to previously prior to the 6v6 tournament. So a lot of different speculation going out there on the social media channels. I'm excited to see what ends up happening with this tournament. But as far as sponsors go, I think the UAE is a very unique, really, it's almost a very new sponsor in general for esports. I haven't really seen many other people jump into the realm of going with embassies yet. So I love the fact that Embassy is exploring this route, is continuing to move esports forward on that international scale, but now finding a new avenue to do that with. MSE is also involved in the NBA 2K League. They have that number one pick upcoming for this year with Wizards District Gaming, but the NBA 2K League is not done just yet. They're bringing on new sponsors and partners as well, this one with Panera Bread. Panera will be the presenting sponsor of the league's 4-round draft. I like this move, John. When we look at sponsors, a lot of what we've seen so far is jersey sponsors. We've seen show sponsors for podcasts and different shows for these esports teams, for the NBA 2K teams in particular. We've seen controller sponsors, console sponsors, tons and tons of sponsors out there. We even have sponsors on the virtual court, which I think is amazing. But now we're jumping in a little differently. They're approaching different angles. They're thinking from fresh angles. They're going with it's fresh. I was trying to use fresh as much as possible. You know, fresh baked bread. And they are just doing it perfectly with this move here. I think Panera is a great sponsor. And bringing into the draft something that players are already looking forward to. They're already seeing who goes to what team. I think this is a great spot for Panera to jump in. Bake it up, John. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer in the marketing principle that you can sell everything. And again, not knowing exactly how Panera is going to be kind of wedged into the NBA 2K League, I'm thinking something along the lines of there's an NBA 2K League team that's on a 12-point roll. Okay? You see where I'm going here, Joey? If you guys follow me on Twitter, you saw this horrible, horrible Joey-esque pun. So let's say WizDG are on a 12-0 roll, you know, against Knicks Gaming. Okay, so you say, oh, WizDG is like butter. They're on a roll. Speaking of on a roll, this roll is brought to you by Panera Bread. Panera Bread, fresh rolls, fresh whatever. It makes so much sense. Like when you look at this, like Joey, we've made fun of partnerships in the past. Turtle Wax being one of them, you know, not making a lot of sense. Turtle Wax going for a League of Legends spot, which was very confusing. Panera Bread's going to the NBA 2K League. There is potential here, though. There is some potential here. Panera Bread, a decent, healthier-esque option, if you will, for quicker food. I'm going to call them fast food. They're a little bit slower than fast food.
Fast casual.
Pardon me. I forgot there's a term for that now. Yeah. these kind of partnerships are good for esports. You know, Panera Bread is a very recognizable name a very strong name. It's up there with things like, you know, Coca-Cola, with McDonald's, you know, brands that people know. Maybe not on the same level as Coca-Cola. They're kind of global. But what I'm trying to say is the audience is going to recognize them, and that's a smart move for both organizations in this sense, in both Panera and NBA 2K League. And I'm going to be interested to see what role Panera does actually play with this sponsorship. Is it going to be an in-game graphic? Is it going to be like, you know, the first bucket brought to you by Panera Bread? Panera Bread, now buy one, get one half off for cookies or something like that. I don't know. We'll see what happens here. But I actually really like this deal quite a bit.
So as of right now, it is just purely for the draft. So they were just sponsoring the four-round draft for now. But, John, if they get on a roll with that draft, if they let it sit there and rise a little bit, the stock could easily go up. There's plenty of potential to butter up this deal and put it into different things. I mean, look, they score baskets in the NBA 2K League. You can just roll right off that, a bread basket here and there. I think there's loads of potential for Panera Bread. And, John, everyone has to eat. These players are hungry. These guys are exerting energy. Yeah, obviously they're not exerting energy like they would be if they're running on an actual basketball court. But at the same point, it uses a lot of energy to be there screaming at one another at the NBA 2K League. Like we've seen, they bring out so much energy in these matches. Players are yelling at each other. Players are communicating quickly with their teammates. They have to think on the fly. In order to think on the fly, you got to be full. There's a lot of different things going on here. I love this deal, and I would not be surprised at all if they roll this into a bigger partnership later down the road.
Joey, I'm going to recommend you change your gamer tag to yeast because you're making my temperature rise.
Hey, I like it. I like it.
I'm going to go away after that one.
See yourself out. Well, we've sliced up that deal enough. Let's head over to the Manchester City Esports deal here. They have signed Etisalat and Nexen Tire as their sleeve partners. Not too much else to report here. I do like the fact that Manchester City is continuing to invest in their esports scene. As of right now, they are only involved in FIFA. But as we really talked about and dove into last week, Gareth Bale joining in with that FIFA scene, but also with his new organization, Elevens, looking into some other scenes as well, looking at CSGO, looking at Rocket League, looking at some of these other up-and-coming scenes and scenes that have been around for a while. I would not at all be surprised if we see Manchester City make a purchase of some of these bigger rosters later down the road and eventually roll that into their Manchester City esports conglomerate as well. But for now, we're just rolling two sleeves, two nice sponsors coming in here. Once again, Manchester City showing that they can bring in big sponsors and continuing to invest in their esports.
Now, I do have to ask you a question real quick because I know you're a Man City fan, but you're also a Fnatic fan, and both of these teams are currently competing in the eWorld Cup right now. Who do you root for?
Fnatic, baby. Fnatic for life. Hashtag always Fnatic.
So if Fnatic goes up against Man City,
crush them.
Oh, wow. You hesitated a little bit. I'm going to blame that on internet lag, but you hesitated just a wee bit.
I mean, I'm used to seeing the orange and black take down the blue and white. I mean, I've seen it with Fnatic and Cloud9 before.
I hate you so
now,
much.
I love some Fnatic and Cloud9. Hashtag FNC9, baby. But Manchester City, yeah, I follow them as a soccer team. They are my EPL team. I followed them for more than a handful of years at this point. But when it comes down to esports, Fnatic was that first love, that black and orange heart. Once again, I will follow them till the end. I hope they bring home the FIFA World Cup. At the same point, I mean, technically, Fnatic is not in the eWorld Cup, is it? It is clubs, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is clubs. The World Cup itself is later. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how it all plays out. But, yeah, Fnatic would definitely be my choice. Immortals has partnered with Toyota of Southern California, making them their exclusive automotive partner for just their LOL franchise. We're not talking every single League of Legends franchise, just the automotive sponsor for their League of Legends franchise. That in particular, I think, is the big key here. If it was going to be every one of their franchises, I think it would be more than just Toyota of Southern California. It would be Toyota as a general big brand out there. So with that being said, this is a smaller partnership compared to some of the other ones we've seen. At the same point, with Immortals jumping back into the League of Legends scene, it is great to see them already picking up sponsors for their team there.
And all the players are going to get Priuses. Hooray!
You are too much, sir. One place they might not get a Prius, but they might bring the pain, is Brazil. Brazilian organization Pain Gaming has announced a partnership with Tinder. John, once again, we've moved from a Bumble partnership with Gen G. Now we have Pain Gaming bringing the pain on Tinder. These always make me very interested and very curious at the same time. They're going to be covering the Dota team, the Free Fire team, Clash Royale, and CSGO squads. No details are really announced yet. So at the moment, this is Tinder that has been unlit. We're still trying to figure out what this kindling is going to turn into. I really have no idea where this is going. I'm honestly clueless of what they're going to do with this deal. Some of the other ones, like the Bumble deal, it was supposed to be like a Bumble-related esports app that was going to come out. I haven't downloaded it. I don't even know if it's been released. I'm married, by the way. Hey, let's just
which
make that clear.
It, which makes it even worse that you said that.
Yeah, let's just make that clear. So I'm just very curious to see where all this rolls out. Like, with these Tinder deals, with these Bumble deals, with these dating app deals in general, what is the end game here? What are they trying to buy? I mean, I guess esports professionals, a number of them are single out there. A lot of gaming or people that are playing games are in the younger audience. For the most part, I would say the average age is right around that. I would say, what do you think? 8 to 23 is probably your average age. In a sense, it would fall somewhere in that spectacle. You do have some older gamers out there and as well some younger gamers out there too, but the majority of them are going to fall in that teen, young 20 adult range, that young adult teen range. So I'm very curious to see how this plays out. I'm not really sure what to speculate on this. Any other thoughts from you on this deal with Tinder and Pain Gaming?
I have to bite my tongue on this.
That would cause pain.
Yeah, it would. Gaming. I've had... Oh God! Why this is so stupid? I don't understand these partnerships with dating apps, let alone Tinder, which isn't really a dating app. It's just purely a hookup app. Let's call it what it is. You don't go to Tinder to date. I've never heard of a success story, other than a spring fling, if you will, on Tinder. I just don't understand this. I've had more friends go on Tinder and leave joining Pain Gaming because it was a painful breakup or whatever that happened. So it's ironic that they're teaming up with an organization called Pain. But I just don't understand these partnerships with esport organizations and dating apps, especially ones that are known for hookup culture, makes absolutely zero sense. And Joey, like you said, you know, the audience for esports can dip pretty young, and you know there's a lot of controversy in esports when it comes to loot boxes. Is it gambling? Is it, you know, the money that's involved in some of these games? And now you're going to add another controversy like Tinder being a sponsor of an organization. It's just adding a lot of question marks as to what direction organizations want to take esports in the future. Do they want to hop on Tinder? Because Tinder is, you know, there's a lot of people who use it, and you're hoping that someone looks at your ad and say, oh, hey, look, you know, they sponsor Pain Gaming. I use Tinder. Now I want to be a fan of Pain Gaming. I don't really see it playing out that way, but who knows? Maybe they might get one or two people who swipe right on Pain Gaming. But I just, these partnerships always to me are so weird and borderline cringy. Partnering up with a dating app, let alone Tinder being a hookup app.
I mean, John, just picture it now. Looking to duo queue off of the Rift?
Oh, God, please no. Joey.
Trying to find a main tank to fill your role queue.
Or Joey, how about you trying to find a jungler that doesn't feed nonstop and
hey,
leave?
Hey, well, you never know with this app. Who knows what they want? I'm just very curious to see where this goes. Again, like you said, John, they're really targeting a young audience here. I don't know the age regulations, but I would assume it's kind of an 18 or up app. Am I wrong in assuming that? I mean, that's like what is generated Tor, right?
I couldn't tell you.
In general, like dating apps are targeted toward 18 and up.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to be 18, but let's be honest, like it's so easy to lie about age online. And that's probably the scarier aspect of these dating apps is that it is so easy to lie online. So you're kind of... it's a very questionable partnership because of all the negativity and bad things that could happen.
I hear you on that. So we'll have to see how that develops. If there is a second date with Tinder and another esports team, we'll know later down the line. But for now, one thing that will age well, at least from the look of things so far, is Riot Games Latin America's team. They're opening up their first esports facility for the LLA, and that is the Liga Latino America. It's going to be opened in Mexico. I really like this move, John. We've seen franchising in NA now. We've seen franchising in EU with the LEC. We've seen them talk about CBLOL over there in Brazil, and now Latin America as well, Central America, North America, right in that Latin America zone. They're putting their first facility for esports in Mexico. I really like this. when you look at esports worldwide, who is doing the best job right now? I think almost everyone would argue that Riot Games is killing it. Yes, there's going to be those people out there that say Fortnite and Epic are killing it. Yes, there's going to be those people saying CSGO has been around forever and it's just continuing to grow. And it is, and it's doing great, and nothing against those two scenes. But if you look at the continued viewership, the continued increase of numbers, the continued increase of revenue, the continued increase of interest from popularity, from sponsors, from fans, from players, from teams, Riot Games and League of Legends continues to do it over and over. Not only that, but now they announce all these other games. You have Legends of Runeterra, their CCG game. You have Project A, this supposed Overwatch and Counter-Strike competitor coming out years down the road. They have so much in the works. Now they have a facility in Latin America, in the heart of Mexico. This is another really, really strong move from Riot Games.
Yeah, so what does this officially mean now? This puts the age-old argument of does Mexico count as part of NA for LCS residency to rest? Are we officially stating that now Mexico is going to be a part of the Central and Latin America scene versus the argument of do they classify as NA residency to rest?
I actually don't know. Does Mexico count as NA residency?
That is a great question.
I think it's
question.
Just Canada and the United States right now, actually.
Yeah, in the OTN server, we have a discussion about this last week, and there was no real solid answer. So it's just kind of curious that, you know, this announcement now comes out and it seems like maybe from the get-go, Mexico was never included in the whole NA residency guidelines for the LCS.
Yeah, we don't have a big chat tonight, but I don't believe they are. I don't know where Squirtle is, but he was definitely looking into this. He was looking at doing a breakdown of the NA players that are actually NA residents versus those that are out there and not currently residents. We found a document at one point. We were diving through it and trying to figure it out. But if I could be wrong, I want to say it was just North America only included the United States and Canada as far as LOL residency for the NALCS. So we'll have to double check that one and get back to you guys. But I believe Mexico and really Latin America in general is considered a very different scene. Like we see here, the LLA, as well as down in Brazil, they have their own scene for South America as well. So I believe, again, don't quote me on this, I want to say North America only considers Canada and the United States as far as Riot's League of Legends scene for the LCS as residents. Are you looking it up?
I'm attempting to, but my internet's being a little slow at the moment.
It is very hard to find, so I would not look it up right now.
Works for me.
We tried to find it. We clicked on like 10 different links. We eventually found an official article with all the rules, and we dove into that, but I can't remember what it was at the moment, so at least to my knowledge, I don't remember that many Mexican players coming up and playing in the LCS as residents. I mean, can you think of anyone prominent?
No,
yeah,
I can't
either at the moment. So yeah, I believe it is their own scene. We will break that down a bit more as we get more information, but at least for now, we do know there's a new facility going up in Mexico. I absolutely love that. If Riot continues to expand, if they continue to expand the way they have been over the previous years, the League of Legends scene and its conglomerates are only going to continue to get bigger. We're going to see more and more regions, more and more players, more and more talented players jumping into the League of Legends scene. Teamfight Tactics. John, I have not played a ton of Teamfight Tactics. I jumped off a lot with Auto Chess. I was playing a ton of Dota 2 Underlords for a while. I played a little bit of Teamfight Tactics in its first generation, but then the whole Rise of the Elements thing made me go away for a little while. I haven't played much since then, but I know you have kept up with it. And now, John, you can keep up with it on PC as well as on your mobile device come next month. Riot has confirmed that they're aiming for a March launch. That is also when I plan on jumping right back into TFT.
Yeah, TFT, you know, for those of us who have stuck around with it, Joey, it's been a lot. It's been exciting. The meta, you know, a lot of people will criticize that the meta changes too much, or you know, they're not able to kind of get a grasp on the current meta. And then when they finally do, it changes. But that's League of Legends. League of Legends changes almost on an every other week basis, if not every 3 weeks. That's just something that they do to keep the game fresh and going. I know it frustrates a lot of people, but with TFT, I think it's very straightforward. Even when some of these changes come out, you know, they'll add new champions in. I think the frustrating part is that RNG aspect of it. So, you know, I can easily understand why that gets frustrating. But Joey, I can't believe I'm actually going to say this, but when TFT comes to mobile, I'm probably going to be playing it a lot more than I already am. It is a game mode that I found myself playing a lot more than just going on Summoner's Rift as of lately. It's less tilting, shocker. Than playing on Summoner's Rift. And it's a lot of fun. I feel like you have a better experience. People aren't quite as toxic in TFT as they are on the Rift. And there's still a lot of strategy that goes into TFT, and the whole mobile aspect of it, I think, can really cause this game to blossom. Now, granted, I struggle playing mobile games. Struggle in the aspect of I tend not to stick around playing them too long because they just can't grab my attention. But the fact that I can play this on my computer and on my mobile device, there's probably a good chance that while I'm at work, even though it's going to be blocked on my company's Wi-Fi, I'm going to hotspot the crap out of my phone and play it on my tablet. It's going to happen. It's probably going to happen quite often. I'll probably fire Joey. I'll be looking for a new job here momentarily. So just keep that in mind. But no, I'm excited for it. I believe TFT is launching with Google Play first in their testing round. Then Apple Store will come soon after. Then a full launch, like you said, Joey, aiming for the March timeframe. Really, really excited. And I haven't been that excited for a mobile game since Pokemon Go. And we all know how well that went over.
Pokemon Go. Good times. Like you said, John, I mean, Auto Chess took the world by storm. It was super popular, especially in Korean internet cafes, which is one of the big measuring points for how games and esports in general are doing at the time. Especially when they release in those first couple months afterward. When you look at TFT, though, you hit on one of the big points. The toxicity is not quite there as we see on Summoner's Rift. That's a big key factor for a lot of people trying to jump into the League of Legends universe. Legends of Runeterra, their new CCG, is another good way to jump in without all that toxicity. You can't even type in Legends of Runeterra. You are purely there. There's little emoticons. You can have a little sad Poro. You can have a little Zed doing like a little ninja thing. I mean, it's good times. It's fun. It's an easy way to communicate without being toxic. Yes, you can type in TFT. Yes, you can have that toxic player that's like, John, did you really have to take my fifth Zed? But at the same point, you also get some fun people in there. You get some fun excitement. And I think because it's not as team-based, because it's solo players in a 1v1, v1v1, et cetera, it's no longer John can't be feeding to the enemy. John can't die to that camp and screw up the whole game. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
Very concentrated, by the way.
I will still find ways to feed in TFT, by the way. Just give it time. I will find
what
some
I'm
way.
Saying is it's a 1v1v1. You're not throwing for that player's experience. That player cannot get tilted because he died three times to a Nasus under tower. I mean, there's so many different experiences with TFT. The biggest factor for me is the RNG and the items. The RNG of getting the pieces you want, and then the items, and then the carousel pieces, a whole nother conglomerate. But when you look at it all together, I think TFT is a great game. It's doing a very good job of what it needs to. Again, I think the changes are a little too regular. I'm okay with little buffs and changes here and there, but I don't want to see tons of new pieces coming in here and there. And I think they've done a good job of slowing that down. I think when we originally brought Rise of the Elements to set 2, I feel like that was too much all at once, especially after players had just settled in with the first set. I'm hoping they've learned their lesson there, though set 3 is supposed to release later this month or early next month. So I'm a little nervous still of how much is going to change with that set. With that being said, I think TFT is in the right direction. They do have a new lead now, so it's going to be interesting to see where he takes this. But moving to mobile is a great move. When you look at mobile, it's selling tons of money. It's making tons in revenue. TFT is one of those games that will fit so well on a mobile device, as will Legends of Runeterra when it releases there as well. This is just going to move Riot Games. Their revenue is going to go up. Their player base is going to go up. Great move all around for everyone involved. And TFT players and Legends of Runeterra players, these are like mouthfuls, tongue twisters all around. These players of these League of Legends franchises trying to dive into the universe and trying to dive into these games now can do so on their PC or their mobile tablet soon. And who knows, maybe it'll be accessible on other consoles and tablets here later on. Now we have to dive into CSGO though, John. The next generation of CSGO, as they branded themselves, is revealed in Flashpoint. This was formerly known as B-Site. So when we talked about all these big sweeping CSGO changes that are coming to all of these different scenes from Faceit to ECS to ECL to DreamHack and so on and so forth, this is the one that was labeled as B-Site as the project name. It is now Flashpoint. I love the name. I love the logo. The league itself, I still have question marks on. So we're looking at it being the first team-owned league. We have Immortals, Mad Lions, Cloud9, Gen G, Dignitas, and Contact Gaming buying in. Faceit will be operating the league. So Faceit, a popular CSGO tournament organizer already, they're also going to have a minority interest in it. Not that they're only going to be slightly interested, but as far as monetarily speaking, they do have some interest in the league itself. When you look at the league prize pool, we're looking at $2 million. So for its first initial season, which is kicking off later this month or early next month, it's going to have a $2 million prize pool for that full season. On top of that, the funding for this, and this is a key factor for me, it's going to be funded by competing organizations to create sustainability and prosperity. Do I think that's the right move? I have a lot of question marks. If I'm an organization that's going to finish near the bottom of the table every time, do I want to keep paying into a league that I know I'm not going to win anyway? So that, to me, makes me a little bit nervous. I understand it's sustainable because these organizations have signed on to pay that. At the same point, you don't have a lot of big names in here. I mean, when you look at it in general, it's really Cloud9. I mean, Immortals is decent. They've had some success here. Dignitas has had some past success here. Same with Gen G. But when you look at a lot of these organizations, Mad Lions, again, under Splice, they did all right. But Cloud9 is really the only one who's had a lot of success in the CSGO scene here. So if I'm Cloud9, hell yes, I buy in. I have a really good chance of winning this prize pool. But if I'm someone like Contact Gaming, is it worth me putting money into this shared prize pool if I have such a slim chance of getting any of it back? I think that's going to be a big question mark for these teams to answer. Last but not least, before I turn it over to you, John, renowned esports personalities are involved in this. Again, that is Thorin and Monte Cristo. They will be acting as on-screen talent as well as helping organize the league behind the scenes. So they are looking at trying to bring some teams in. They are looking at setting up the production. They've had much, much experience, especially Monte Cristo, coming from League of Legends, where he led the OGN scene for the English broadcast over there in South Korea. And then he was also with the Overwatch League these past two seasons. On top of that, they're also joined by Semler, DDK, Anders Bloom, Moses, and Sean Garrez as well. And they're kicking off with open qualifiers in February. Just kicked off this past week, but again, a lot still going on as far as these open qualifiers go. The league itself is still getting set up, but John, I have a lot of questions. I love the logo. I love the idea. I love the talent behind it, but again, this whole with the teams and organizations funding the prize pool and the lack of those top-tier teams, I am a bit nervous to see how this goes. With it being titled Site B, it's starting to feel like a B-tier league so far.
Yeah, and I feel like all those concerns you brought up are legitimate and very, very, very valid. You know, with so much change that we're seeing in the CSGO scene, if you do not have questions about the future of CSGO on the, you know, top tier of the CSGO esports scene, then you're not really following CSGO all that closely. Now, the saving grace here is, yes, Joey, Cloud9 is involved. A lot of organizations will look at Cloud9 and say, okay, cool, let them take the risk to begin. And if this thing is actually legit, we're going to hop in also. Again, that's pure speculation, but you know, that it's a good signal that at least Cloud9 is involved in the initial launch of this. Something else to think of, Monte Cristo. If you followed Monte's career, like you said, Joey, that goes all the way back to the LCK with OGN and the English broadcast, he left Riot Games. Granted, there was a lot more to it. But essentially, there's a lot of creative differences between Monte and Riot in terms of how they saw the future of the LCK and League of Legends as an esport title going forward. Goes over to Overwatch League, goes there for 2 years, and eventually leaves Blizzard and the Overwatch League over creative differences as well. So if there is one thing that at least I can sit here and be comfortable about, is that Monte Cristo knows what he wants. He has a vision of what an esport production and shoutcasters should look and sound like. He wants to have that creative control, and he's worked with Thorin for many, many, many years on different titles and different podcast shows and live streams. They have very good chemistry, so it's good to see two personalities team up like these two to kind of bring that production in their own version of it, a version that has a very strong following. Now, with that being said, these are probably two of the more controversial shoutcasters and esport personalities out there. You know, I'm not just going to sit here and absolutely, worship Thorin and Monte Cristo here because there are some downsides to this. They have a lot of haters, but granted, if you have haters, you're probably doing something right. Without going too far in depth here, you know, they are bringing both the good and the bad with this. I think the good is going to outweigh the negative here. Monte and Thorin really hasn't allowed any of that negativity to come out in their cast. Like they are very critical when they are casting, but it's a style that a lot of esport fans like, and they get the viewers, they get the social media engagements and interactions. So it makes a whole lot of sense to have these two guys really spearheading, you know, Site B, now known as Flashpoint. So again, Joey, I think all the questions that you have raised make a whole lot of sense, and I'm right there with you. The big gold star, the shining moment here in this entire announcement is the fact that Thorne and Monte Cristo sound like they're going to have more say in the production and stream of this league. So there's a good chance that this broadcast, this production, could be everything that we have wanted from Monte Cristo. Maybe, who knows, maybe Doa might join him. Maybe Puckett might join him. Maybe Malik might join him. You know, talking these major, major names from Overwatch League that are now freelance looking for jobs also. So there's a lot of possibility on the production side here. But as the competition, Joey, I'm right there with you. A lot of concerns.
Right. And if you stick with the grading theme here, I think one way to look at it, if you look at casters, production, talent, you have a high A. It's looking really good. Yeah, like you said, John, Thorin, Monte Cristo, they've had their controversial moments, but overall the talent as a pool looks very strong. When you look at the teams, I think you're looking at a B-C+. Cloud9's your big notable one there, but a lot of these other teams, they have decent rosters. They've done well in competitions, but they're definitely not top tier. They're not the Astralis. They're not the many, many teams. I mean, Fnatic is another big one out there. You have Na'Vi is a very strong team out there right now. Tons and tons of teams out there. FaZe being another big one. None of them in the pool so far. So I would give the pool about a B-C+. When you look at Face It as a producer, as the person running the tournament, let's call him the TO in this case, I think they're very highly rated as well. So again, I think the biggest thing is not the prize pool. It's not the talent. It's not the organizer. It's a bit of the teams, but again, it's the long-term growth here. Especially when you look at the teams and you assume that one of these teams is probably always going to finish in the top three, while some of these other teams will always finish in the bottom three. What's the prize pool looking like? Do they want to continue to contribute to this prize pool if they end up losing money in the long run? So what's it worth playing in this league versus your actual prize winnings coming in? And I think that's going to be the big question mark for a lot of these orgs. Ubisoft is set to launch 5 AAA games between April 2020 and March 2021. We're not going to tell you to buy stock in Ubisoft, but it is not a bad place to look at this point, especially with 5 AAA games on their radar for this next year. According to their earnings call, we are looking at Watch Dogs Legion being announced and dropped. We're looking at Gods and Monsters, Rainbow Six Quarantine, and 2 others from Ubisoft's biggest franchises. They did not say what those other titles were going to be on the earnings call. I don't 100% know if they've been announced yet or not. With that being said, if we look at some of Ubisoft's franchises, John, you have Tom Clancy stuff over there. So you have like the Ghost Recon, you have The Division, different titles like that under that Tom Clancy name. They've had many, many big Tom Clancy titles in the past, but you also have some other cool titles under their name as well. Do you have any speculation of what this next Ubisoft title could be, one of these two?
I honestly don't, and I don't like guessing because I want to be surprised. I get it. People want to speculate on what the next title is going to be, and that's awesome. But Ubisoft has created such amazing titles over the past, I would probably throw close to 10 years. You know, I really don't want to guess here, but I have a feeling that it's going to be something really good, really awesome, really big. Obviously, one of the biggest franchises here, you know, the biggest franchises that they're kind of teasing here. Maybe, Joey, I don't want to guess. Don't make me guess.
Okay, I'm going to give you 3 because okay. I think this is what's going to come down to. I think another Tom Clancy game could be a big one. Obviously, you have Rainbow Six out there, but we haven't seen a Splinter Cell game in a while. You could also see another Ghost Recon game coming out, so I think it's going to be something Tom Clancy. And okay. The other one I think I'm going to throw out there is Far Cry. I don't think we've seen a Far Cry game in a couple years. That's one of their biggest franchises. I could see it being Far Cry. And last but not least, this one flies under the radar a bit, but Just Dance. That is one of their most popular franchises. I would not be surprised to see a new Just Dance title released as well.
Now, I've done an absolutely terrible job of keeping up on this franchise, but what about maybe another Assassin's Creed? When was the last Assassin's Creed come out? When was
that was Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Odyssey. Okay, so we're talking,
I think. Well, that's the main like a mainline Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, so that was in 2018 was its initial release date. Maybe we see another Assassin's Creed come out.
It's very possible. Very, very possible. And that would be considered a mainline franchise or, as they quoted, one of their biggest franchises. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But that was not the only earnings call from this past week as far as gaming news is involved, John. Activision Blizzard. the studio known for Overwatch and Diablo and Warcraft and World of Warcraft and all of the different Warcraft games. Not so much Heroes of the Storm anymore. But when you look at... Nice addition to the notes there, sir.
Sorry.
Activision Blizzard has come out, and as John says, shocker, they are releasing another Call of Duty title. And not only are they releasing one, John, it is planned to be released in Q4 of 2020. Boy, have I made my thoughts known on this already with the Call of Duty League. If I'm an organization paying $25 million plus dollars to buy into this franchise league, and I buy these players that are really good in this title, why in the world are you going to release another game the same year? Like, this really frustrates me in general. I love it in the fact that... I don't love it at all. I understand it in the fact that Call of Duty makes a ton of money. Every single year they release a new title, they end up selling it, and it does extremely well. Modern Warfare, I believe, broke their record once again. But when it comes down to it for the esports side, if they're going to push this esports side as hard as they are, I don't feel like you can rotate the title every single year. Yes, you can argue it keeps the scene fresh, it keeps it interesting. I would counter that argument in saying it doesn't allow them to invest in players that are good at one title and maybe not as good in the other, and it doesn't allow players to invest in the game. Watching League of Legends, watching it for, I don't know how long I followed the pro scene, like 6-7 years at this point. Yes, they're changing the map, they're adding little things here and there, there's new champions, but I've been able to dive into the storyline of players so much better because of this. And I've understood champions more. I've understood the mentality of regions. I can now tell you the differences between the LCS, the LEC, the LPL, the LCK, because I've watched these styles develop over the course of 5+ years. Now, when you look at Call of Duty, we're looking at completely different maps, completely different guns, possibly completely different players. It's just, as someone who wants to jump into this esports scene as a viewer, as someone who wants to be a fan, as someone who wants to be an analyst and watch these esports scenes grow, this is a big stunt to that development for me. Yes, Activision Blizzard, they are going to get a ton of money from releasing this title, and I completely understand that. But if they really want to invest in the esports scene, I do not think you can change out the title every single year. I think it's just going to hurt the growth of that scene. Again, you're going to sell tons of copies, but if you're trying to do both at the same time, I just don't think it's going to work. I'm a little fiery about this one.
No, I mean, you have every right to be. It's something that when CDL was announced, it was a concern that we brought up multiple times, like you said, Joey. And now this earnings call just goes to prove that everything we've said is coming to fruition, unfortunately, which is these organizations that throw millions and millions of dollars around, all of a sudden that they've built a roster based upon one title. I mean, look, find me. Here's a challenge to anyone who's watching or listening to this. Find me two Call of Duty titles that go back to back that are so similar you wouldn't need to overhaul even your friend's team. Like, if you have a neighborhood group of friends that you play Call of Duty with and you all have set roles, find me back-to-back titles where you did not have to completely overhaul what you were doing. Now add $25 million to that. It's a terrible investment. It's a terrible message that Activision is sending out here. There's a lot of bad things happening. I'm not a huge fan of this.
And again, we're speculating. We haven't seen this happen. Well, we've seen titles, Call of Duty titles, come out year after year for years on end, but we haven't seen how it'll affect a pro scene directly yet. I do not see this. I really don't see it having a positive impact. Like I said, I feel like some players are pro. I mean, every single one of these players are pros. They're very talented. They're very good. But when you change up the maps and change up the guns and possibly change up the controls a bit here and there from title to title, is John going to be as good at this Call of Duty title as he was at this past one? Am I going to come in and be as good at this title as I was at the last one? And I think that's a question that teams are going to have to ask about their teammates, about all their players in general. And do we need to switch this player out? Because he was great in Modern Warfare, but he's not very good in Black Ops 3000. I mean, that's going to be one of those things we have to see over and over, how teams are going to develop around it, how the scene is going to grow with it. Me, I'm quite doubtful up front. I'm going to say I'm at least skeptical. I have a lot of skepticism for this. I do not see this going very, very well. At the same point, the Call of Duty scene has continued on through titles before. It has never been on the scale of the Call of Duty League, but it has continued on. Players have stuck with organizations. They've done their best, but we've seen orgs ebb and flow because of keeping players or releasing players. So I'm curious to see how it all goes down. Again, not a huge shocker. We do see a new Call of Duty title, but a shocker with the investments they've made in esports. WoW Classic will get new content as well, similar to how other Blizzard games continue to get new content. With this one, John, I'm just curious to get a quick speculation on it. Do you think this is going to be something new that we haven't seen in WoW? Or do you think this is going to be similar to, let's say, one of the past expansions, like Cataclysm or whatever, as far as maybe just changing a few things up here and there, as opposed to a completely new expansion than what we see with the current WoW as the classic.
Well, I'm going to tell you what the community wants. I'm going to tell you why Blizzard won't do it. The community wants Burning Crusade. Not just because Blood Elves are the most played race in the entirety of World of Warcraft, but because, here's the thing, no one really had an issue with what World of Warcraft was doing until after Wrath of the Lich King. So you want to go back to vanilla? Okay, cool, awesome. Is vanilla, is classic WoW really vanilla? The answer is definitely not. It's nowhere even close to what vanilla was. It is a good taste for people who weren't around during vanilla WoW to give them a taste of what it used to be like. Definitely nowhere even close to what vanilla WoW was. You bring Burning Crusade out. Now you're catching up to date with that storyline from the Warcraft RTS series. You know, all those games that people grew up loving Warcraft on, you're kind of bringing everything to fruition. Wrath of the Lich King is the culmination of the RTS Warcraft series. Warcraft 3 was when Arthas became the Lich King. Wrath of the Lich King is the defeat of the Lich King. So really, up until Wrath of the Lich King, that is essentially the culmination of that main storyline. Then after that, that's where things started to get a little funky for World of Warcraft. So what the community wants is, and this you see it on forums, you see it on Reddit, you see it everywhere, the community wants everything up to Wrath of the Lich King, and then go a different direction. Make it an alternate universe. It is an idea that people have wanted, not people have wanted, but it's an idea that Blizzard has done in Warlords of Draenor. They've created an alternate Outlands and all this other crap to make a really confusing storyline. Because Gul'dan, who was killed, is now back. It's an alternate reality, an alternate universe Gul'dan. It was all it's not out of the realm of Blizzard's, you know, wackadoodle mindset here. That's what the community would want, is for them to take that fork in the road at Wrath of the Lich King and go in a different direction. Blizzard won't do that. Why? Because they're Blizzard. They don't have to do that. I personally think they're going to go to Wrath of the Lich King and then just stop. And they won't do anything else with it. I really don't see them doing too much of anything with Classic. It's an add-on to your subscription fee. You know, yeah, there's a lot of people playing it. It's more of the nostalgic aspect of it. The numbers have dropped. Okay? You know, retail World of Warcraft isn't doing so hot. BFA has been an absolute flop. Shadowlands is off to I mean, it's not out yet, but from the little leaks here and there that we begin, it's been an absolute nightmare. So WoW Classic really is going to be the only saving grace. They need to go Burning Crusade next. They don't really have a choice. That's what they need to do. Blizzard won't do it. They're going to shoot themselves in their foot from doing something that the community actually wants, and they're just going to maybe, who knows, maybe the whole Blood Plague patch that came out in early vanilla, I think it was like 1.6, where there was a bug in this raid in vanilla that caused like this huge pandemic where everyone just started dying in major cities because it was passing on from everyone to everyone. It was absolutely fascinating. Great time to play. Wow. Maybe we'll get that back. Maybe people won't experience that again, but I don't see them doing what the community wants, which is going to Burning Crusade next.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm a little bit more optimistic with this than I am about how the Call of Duty League is going to progress. I think when you look at Activision, one thing they know how to do well is make money. We've seen it time and time again. They're going to make decisions that make them more money, whether it be for the better or the worse of the players. I'm hoping with some of these big Xbox guys that are very player-focused moving over there, like Rod Ferguson, like Mike Ybarra, I'm hoping some of that influence comes into these Blizzard titles and helps them continue to develop in that player-first aspect. But again, it's going to be something we have to wait and see how that develops. Diablo Immortal, that game that a lot of people are waiting for on their mobile devices. If you're not playing TFT or Legends of Runeterra, you might be playing Diablo Immortal. That went off to so much praise just a couple BlizzCons ago. Again, guys, a little sarcasm coming in here. It is planned to enter testing in the middle of the year, so we'll have to see how that one develops. And then King, most known for making Candy Crush. Again, they ended up being bought out by Activision Blizzard. I think it might have just been Blizzard at the time. Can't remember exactly. But they're going to be investing in new titles this year, most likely mobile titles there. BioWare. It has been rumored before. I think we talked about it like 3 or 4 months ago. I believe Kotaku was the first one to come out with it. BioWare is now confirming that they are going to be overhauling Anthem. Anthem is that absolutely gorgeous game we saw at E3 a few years ago. It ended up getting released, and again, looking gorgeous in February when it released of 2019. But as far as the content goes, John, it is lacking. The story had some good moments, but not enough of them. The endgame itself, the loot was very scarce. Players did not want to grind when they had other options like Borderlands coming out later that fall, The Division coming out just a month later in March 2019. But some players are still playing Anthem. There is tons of creative designs that I've seen out there as far as how they've changed their javelin suits up. And the actual seasonal patches they've dropped, again, I haven't played them, but I've heard amazing things about how they've been able to change the landscape, add new entities in, add new loot, add new creatures, and the loot finally looking a lot different, looking more unique, similar to what we see in Destiny. I think Anthem and BioWare with Anthem are now on the right path. With that being said, they went on a very rugged, very far off path to get to this path, and now they need to loop it back around. It's not something they can simply do through a few story updates and some DLC here and there. It needs to be overhauled. They realize that. They're going to be overhauling it over the next few months. I personally think it's going to take closer to half a year, if not a full year, to do the full overhauls that we need to see in-game while they still add a little thing here and there to keep players around. This is No Man's Sky, but again, a lot different. This is coming under the EA umbrella. This is coming here with BioWare, a well-renowned studio. Again, did not deliver on this. At least if you believe some of the articles out there, I believe Kotaku wrote this one as well. The studio just did not know the direction they wanted to go. At one point, they wanted flying. Then someone said they didn't like flying, but then an executive director liked flying, and they went back and forth on all these simple mechanics, and the environmental design continued to press forward, and it looks amazing, but the story fell back. The design of the loot fell back. A lot of the aspects of the endgame never ended up in the game, so now that we're seeing this overhaul, I think Anthem has a bright future ahead of it. I want to believe because it is one of the most gorgeous games I played, but as far as endgame content, it is so lacking right now, it's almost not worth playing. It really isn't worth playing for most gamers, so I'm hoping to see it end up looking good after the overhaul. John, I'm hoping we can fly around in our javelin suits once again.
I'd have to reinstall the game first.
But, I mean, if they do this overhaul right, if it ends up like a No Man's Sky, if they put all that effort into it, which, again, I'm a bit skeptical. This has been the Joey Skeptical Level Up podcast. I'm very curious to see how it develops, but if they do it right, I will 100% be re-downloading and playing the game again. This upcoming weekend, John, we have a lot of fun events. Before we hit our results, we have to talk about what's upcoming. One of those biggest events is the Caps Gaming Showcase. They are going to continue to chip away at the number of teams remaining. Like you said, there were a ton of teams that came out. This is a 6v6 tournament. We have goalies in goal being played by players. They are now chipping away at the Elite Eight, the final eight of the tournament, breaking that down to four as we continue on in the Caps Gaming Showcase. Top seed, Hidden Potential, is set to take on number 8, the Underdogs. Number 4, Resilience, is up against number 5, the Natty Light Knights. John, what a great name there.
Classy.
Very creative. Love it. Number 2 seed, Turning Point, is set to take on the number 7 seeded Phantoms. And then last, but surely not least, number 3 seeded Entourage are set to go up against the number 6 seeded challenger, Highlight Highlanders. So, John, of all the teams that entered this tournament, we are down to the final 8, the Elite 8 of the Caps Gaming Showcase. So much amazing Chell action happening. I am stoked for this weekend.
Yeah, and it's a best of 3 series. So, obviously, 2 wins, you're going to punch your ticket to Washington, D.C. This is the weekend where it's going to happen. We're going to figure out which 4 teams are going to punch their tickets from the quarterfinals to the semifinals. Joey, this tournament has gone on for a very long time. This started, I believe it was 8 weeks ago. They had 8 weeks of Swiss format games, and it was a tough, grueling schedule, and we're finally down to the last 8. Half of these teams are going to be traveling to Washington, D.C. for the in-person event at Capital One Arena in D.C. for the semifinals, which is going to be a best of 5, and then the finals, which will be another best of 5 taking place on February 29th. Now, there are some major names that were in this tournament that may or may not make it to Washington, D.C. One of the biggest names in here, Nasher, a big YouTube personality, Chell commentator, and just all-around great hockey guy. If you're looking for great hockey content, Nasher, I'm personally a big fan of him. He was in this tournament as well, playing with Montage Moment, if you will. They just recently lost to Resilience in the last round. So, unfortunately, they got knocked out. But I can guarantee you Nasher's still going to be in D.C. covering this for his YouTube channel and all the content that he does for the Chell scene. But, you know, these are some major names that are still in this tournament. You know, and we have eight amazing teams. If you have not had a chance to watch it, it's on the Capitals Twitch channel. Be on twitch.tv/Capitals is their handle there on Twitch. I know last weekend they kind of had like an NFL red zone kind of go through where they were switching between games, kind of talking about the action. This week I expect the same thing. All these games, I believe, are being played at the same time. So you're going to be seeing a lot of flipping between all these amazing matchups. Then there's going to be a week off. And then on the 29th of February in Washington, D.C., the semifinals and the finals, semifinals being played one right after the other, followed by the finals. It is going to be a long day of Chell action, a long day of 6v6 Chell action, and it's going to be absolutely fantastic. The Chell community is so hyped for this. They've been looking for Chell action nonstop. The Tampa Bay event brought in thousands of viewers. It was very well done. Joey, you and I had the opportunity to do the Chell Classic with the Caps and Tampa Bay last year. Great organization there. And now the Caps Gaming Showcase and MSC and Washington Capitals are on the clock again with the showcase. And I expect nothing less than just five-star quality all across the board from MSC and these players. It's going to be absolutely great Chell eSport action.
Absolutely. So in addition to that amazing Chell eSport action from the Caps Gaming Showcase presented by Leidos, we also have some other stuff going on, John. A little league known as the Overwatch League enters into week two, where we see our very own Washington Justice compete. We also have Call of Duty League returning this upcoming week. And this past week they were in London. This upcoming week, they're not playing this upcoming week. It is a few weeks later in Atlanta, so we do have a week off for the Call of Duty League. And once again, they did make those changes so the Overwatch League can take some more of that spotlight as well with the viewership. We see a few other things here and there, but one other thing to put on your radar for this upcoming week outside of Valentine's Day is going to be the Bleeding Edge closed beta. That's going to run Valentine's Day weekend, President's Day weekend as well. Go ahead and check that out if you're interested. Supposedly, it's like a top-down, third-person hack-and-slash version of Overwatch. It's going to be very interesting. They're blending a lot of different themes together. That is done by Ninja Theory under Microsoft's title, so go ahead and check that out if you're on Xbox or PC. Moving over to our results, we have the Call of Duty League. John, it happened this past weekend. The London Royal Ravens hosted over in London, February 8th through the 9th. The teams that ended up participating. So again, the way Call of Duty League works, it's going to be a homestand each. It's like every other weekend, and it's only going to be a few of the teams participating. It will not be every single team every single weekend. Group A for the London, we have Chicago Huntsmen, the Dallas Empire, the Seattle Surge, and the Los Angeles Gorillas. Again, not the big hairy apes. We're talking like militia gorillas. Group B, London Royal Ravens, the Paris Legion, New York Subliners, and Toronto Ultra. Moving forward after group play, we ended up seeing the Chicago Huntsmen and Dallas Empire advance, as well as the London Royal Ravens and the Paris Legion. That sets us up for our finals, which happened on Sunday, February 9th. Kicking things off first were the semifinals between the Dallas Empire and the London Royal Ravens. Dallas took the win 3-2. In our second semifinal matchup, we had the Chicago Huntsmen, that number one seed from Group A, up against the second seed in Group B, the Paris Legion. Chicago took that series 3-2. Again, two best of five game series. The semifinals were enlivening. They were exciting. They were fun to watch. The finals, not so much. The finals that happened again that same Sunday, February 9th, we saw it between the Dallas Empire and the Chicago Huntsmen. The Huntsmen took the win 3-0. Dallas ain't building any kind of empire in London. Chicago came out fighting. They showed why they are hunting for the trophy at the end of the season. That 3-0 win looked very solid. Looking at Atlanta, John, we have a number of different teams coming in there. Some repeating teams, but just to give a quick preview of the groups before we get a full rundown of your thoughts on the Call of Duty League so far. Group A is Atlanta FaZe, Florida Mutineers, Optic Gaming LA, the London Royal Ravens. So you have one repeat team already right there. Over to Group B, you have the Chicago Huntsmen, repeat, Minnesota Rocker, Paris Legion, Toronto Ultra. So three teams returning in Group B with one new team coming into Group A, one returning team in Group A. So a little bit of new blood here and there. Again, not as many changes as I'd like to see week to week, but this is going to be your Atlanta event happening February 22nd through the 23rd. John, have you had a chance to catch Call of Duty League action yet?
Here and there. These past weekends have been absolutely packed with eSport action. So I've tuned in for a couple games. From what I have seen from these matches, it's exciting. The fans, the atmosphere has been absolutely amazing. A little controversy that has come out of CDL here and there based upon banned traits versus not banned traits. I'm trying to avoid sneezing. I can feel myself about to sneeze. It's a terrible feeling. If you know what I'm talking about, then you know what I'm talking about.
And now, for the listeners out there that can't see, does closing your eyes and cover them with your hands help?
It does when there's a gigantic light shining in your eyes.
Sean is allergic to lights. You heard it here first, folks.
Yes, sir. Then he go crawl back into a basement. So, but so far, so good. I know a lot of people have a lot of question marks with CDL. You know, we have our own concerns with CDL, the price point, and just how awful, like we talked about before, there's going to be a new title coming out this year, so it makes no sense. But anywho, so far, so good. A lot of people have been trying to say, like, you know, the facilities these things have been getting set up in are second tier. And also, look, everything that has happened so far has looked great. The production's been decent. You know, they're piggybacking a lot off of the footwork that Overwatch League did. CDL is going straight into homestands. It's something that it took 3 years for Overwatch to eventually get to in their third season, is homestands. So, you know, Overwatch League kind of laid the groundwork here, and CDL is benefiting from it. I feel like the people that are able to go to these homestands are really enjoying the experience of going to these homestands, seeing these teams play in person, and the people who want to watch on Twitch, YouTube, can stay home and watch on YouTube and still have a great time watching CDL. So far, so good. I have no complaints from the actual league itself or the gameplay. It has been pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely good stuff. And again, it's still early on. The season itself is still just getting kicked off. This was simply week two, so there's a lot still to be shown, a lot still to develop as well. So I'm excited to see how it continues to develop as a league and as these organizations continue to invest more outside of the money, but putting more of their marketing into the teams as well. Overwatch League happened this past week. It kicked off with week one. We had two homestands. It was the first one hosted by the New York Excelsior, where we saw the Toronto Defiant, the Paris Eternal, London Spitfire, and the Boston Uprising over there. Really good stuff going on, and of course the New York Excelsior, if I didn't say them. So you had five teams coming out here. It was a really exciting first week, I would say. Some of the scores were a little bit of a blowout. This one in particular, we had the Toronto Defiant winning 3-1 over the Paris Eternal, the New York Excelsior taking their game over the Spitfire 3-1, the Spitfire going 0-3 up against the Paris Eternal, and then the Boston Uprising laying the goosing up against home team New York Excelsior. So again, the New York homestand left a lot to be desired as far as competitive scorelines, but it's really nice to see Overwatch League action back again. And not only that, John, but for all the question marks that have been out there about homestands, the New York crowd sure as hell delivered. There was so much excitement. There was so much applause. There was so much happening at this homestand as far as events, as far as game action. Again, not the tightest of score lines, but if you look at the fans, it looks like everyone had a wonderful time there.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we said it before, we were lucky enough to experience the Atlanta homestand last year. And look, there's esport fans all around this country. You know, a lot of these titles and leagues are based out of LA for a reason. You know, Overwatch League, Blizzard, and Activision took the gutsy step of doing these homestands for a full year. That is great for fans outside of LA who may not be able to, who want to travel to LA, who can afford to travel to LA. I mean, that alone is just expensive. But, you know, it's exciting. If you're in New York, you can go to the New York homestands. If you're in London, you go to London. Or if you're here in D.C., there's five homestands that the Washington Justice are going to host. So if you're local or nearby or within driving distance, it is completely not out of the option of taking a weekend to go to one of these events or a day to go experience four or five great Overwatch League matches. And it's a great opportunity and a great opportunity and a great experience. And that's what we saw out of New York. Not only do we see New York Excelsior continuing to be a dominant team in their third season, when a team like London Spitfire seems to have fallen off a little bit from their season one glory, you know, you had an amazing New York crowd bringing the energy, bringing the hype. It looked amazing. It sounded amazing. Kind of made me wish I was there maybe, but I'm not driving 5 hours to New York, especially if my Justice aren't playing. But yeah, it was a good first homestand for Overwatch League.
Yes, it was, but it was not the only one. Dallas also hosted a homestand in the Esports Stadium at Arlington. We had the LA Gladiators, the Vancouver Titans, the LA Valiant, Dallas Fuel, and the San Francisco Shock, your returning champions from Season 2. That first matchup was a tight one. The Titans ended up taking it 3-2 over the Gladiators. Then the Valiant came out with a 3-1 win, dousing the flame of the Dallas Fuel at their homestand. Then we had the LA Valiant come out, not so valiant in their next matchup, going down to the Vancouver Titans 3-0. And then the Shock shocking no one with a win 3-1 over the Fuel. Unfortunately for Dallas, unlike New York, who went 2-0 at their homestand, Dallas kicks off season 3 0-2. Not the best event here as far as the score lines. Once again, there were some 3-0 blowouts, some 3-1 wins as well. Not the tightest of scores, but again, if you looked at the crowd, if you looked at the excitement, there was some arguments here and there about practice facilities and having a lack of practice facilities for some of the teams due to some scheduling issues here and there, and that's going to be something we have to see ironed out over the course of these homestands. But again, John, if you look at the electricity of the crowd, they were electric, they were ready to have a good time, and it looked like they were having one. Previewing this next week ahead, and again, we have gone a little long on the show, so just taking a little bit of a quicker preview here, we have the Battle of Brother... I love this. The Battle of Brotherly Love here in Philadelphia this upcoming weekend. It's going to be happening at the Met for week two, and this is going to be February 15th through the 16th. The Florida Mayhem, the Houston Outlaws, the Washington Justice, and the Philadelphia Fusion will be the four teams taking part in this one. John, if you had to pick one match to look for, I'm going to go ahead and throw mine out there. It's going to be the Washington Justice and Philadelphia Fusion. A lot of people highly touting the Fusion this season. A lot of people saying the Fusion are a top three, at least top five team, while a lot of people are putting the Justice around spot 13 or 12. I think the Justice are going to be a lot higher up there. I don't know if they're going to compete with the Fusion right out of the gates, but I do think this Justice, like we said last week, I think they're a playoff-ready team. I think they will give the Fusion a bit of a fight, even with having a sub in place of Lulshish.
Yeah, and the other thing to factor into, there is already a rivalry built between DC and Philadelphia, and that does kind of transcend normal sports. That is more of a society thing between the DMV and the Philadelphia and Southern Jersey area. It's a love-hate relationship. I mean, let's be completely honest. And a lot of people, I can't remember, there was a conversation somewhere, I can't remember where it was, but they were asking, is the Fusion really the number one rival for the Washington Justice? And there's a lot of arguments saying yes, just because they're Philadelphia. And I think that's a fair argument. Philadelphia has been a decent team in Overwatch. They have been very consistent. And I think the Justice, if they want to be able to compete, the Philadelphia Fusion is a great team to look up to in terms of a rivalry and kind of a benchmark to kind of see where do you stand as an organization. So I do think the Washington Justice and the Philadelphia Fusion match is going to be the match to look at. But again, it's going to be different without having Lulshish in there due to visa issues. So we may not learn too much, but we're still going to be able to see if Corey and Stratus are still going to be able to be the DPS gods that they were last stage in season two. Is that going to translate to season three for the Justice as well?
Absolutely. So check out that happening this weekend in the City of Brotherly Love. Great teams coming in, some top contenders, some not so top contenders, and some team that, again, we are rating a lot higher than a lot of analysts are. So we'll have to see how all that plays out this upcoming weekend. But John, we got to talk a little bit about the LEC and LCS before we move on and end the show. And first thing comes first, Fantasy LCS. Both you and I drafted into an OTN Fantasy LCS LEC league, and now we have the first battle of co-hosts, round one for this split. I am currently leading our matchup 307.56 to 276.90, but it is not over yet. You still have one player playing tonight, and that is Impact for Team Liquid, up against one of the weaker teams in the league in Golden Guardians. We've seen a lot of top laners take advantage of Haunter time after time again so far this season. You're hoping Impact does that again tonight. I'm hoping Team Liquid does not win. And for the sake of Scorsel and the sake of my fantasy team, I'm going to be a Golden Guardians fan tonight. But what are your thoughts so far in the fantasy league? We are playing with Draft Buff. Again, it's not that official LCS platform because they've been working on that for 2-3 years now. It feels like there's so much caution tape going around that platform. We don't know what's going to happen with it. But Draft Buff came in. They came in clutch. And so far, it's been great as a fantasy platform, in my opinion. There's some things they need to add. Some different rule customization would be nice. But overall, nice and raw, it looks like you and I could end up at the top once again this split.
We will end up at the top. It'll just be a decision of who's going to be one and who's going to be two. Joey, that's the reason why I am wearing a Team Liquid jersey. That is the real reason I have the South Korean flag behind me, because I am praying to the top lane god that is Impact for a solid 27-point performance here. because that's where I'm going to need to beat you. You currently have about a 25-26 point lead on me, with Impact only getting me roughly 10 points from his first game. From what I've seen from Impact so far, I am not expecting him to get 27 points at all. He'll probably come in quite below that. But the good news is he is going up against Golden Guardians, so there's a lot of possibility with Golden Guardians. Kind of underperforming. Again, Hanzo are getting taken advantage of quite a bit with Golden Guardians. Can Impact return to his dominant form? I believe Broxah is back, correct? Or is he not back yet?
His visa is approved, but I don't think he starts until next week.
Okay, so if Broxah was actually back, then I'd feel a little bit more comfortable. But it's going to be a tight one. I do think, Joey, I think you're going to take this one. But I think in the rematch, I don't think it's going to be as favored towards you in the rematch.
We will have to wait and see. But one thing we don't have to wait and see is the current standings of the LEC and LCS. John, give me a rapid-fire rundown of those LEC standings.
It's going to be easy. There's a four-way tie for second place. First place, 6-0, G2. For that four-way tie in second place, we're talking Origin, Mad Lions, your boys, Fnatic, and Misfits all at 4-2. Sixth place, another two-way tie, 3-3 with Excel and Rogue. Eighth place, SK Gaming, 2-4. Schalke 04 and Team Vitality. It's two teams, G2, the best impersonation of the opposite of G2, both 0-6.
Joe, any matches of the week that you were looking forward to?
I was just about to ask you that, sir. You're the European expert.
The European expert. Yeah, there's a couple that stand out to me. On day one, which is going to be Friday, February 14th, that's Valentine's Day lovers out there. Mad Lions up against Origin Gaming. These are two teams I really like right now. I think Origin's a top 2-4 team. I think Mad Lions is in that 3-5 range. I really want to see these teams go to head-to-head. Mad Lions pushed G2 to their limits early on. And yes, you can argue G2 might have had some little nerves going on stage for the first time of the split. You can argue Mad Lions was that so far of an underdog that they were able to punch above their weight. I want to see them up against a controlled team like Origin. Mad Lions has a ton of mechanical elements that they're able to bring in game after game. They're so extremely mechanically talented. Origin, on the other hand, really plays through strategy and their macro play. They don't have bad mechanics. They have very strong mechanical players, but they're not winning games on mechanics alone. They're winning through their macro plays. I want to see how that high mechanical style of Mad Lions matches up against that high macro style of Origin. Who is going to be that next big seed? Who is going to take that fourth spot potentially, or third spot, depending how these teams continue to progress? So that's what I'm looking forward to. I think Fnatic Mad Lions will also be good. Mad Lions, I think, is just a really fun team to watch right now just because they have so many young players and they're still developing their style as far as in the LEC. So I'm curious to see that one as well. But yeah, Mad Lions really the team to watch this week. Over to the LCS, John, looking at the standings. I'm not going to be as funny this week because we do got to go a little quicker. First place is Cloud9, 6-0, TSM 4-2 in that second place spot. Dignitas, FlyQuest, and 100 Thieves sitting at 3-3. Immortals, not looking so immortal, 3-2 in the sixth spot right now. Evil Genius is 2-4. Team Liquid at 2-3. No one saw that coming, even with those visa issues. Was not expecting them to drop that far. CounterLogic Gaming 1-4, and the Golden Guardians sitting on their golden seat of last place at 1-4 as well. Moving forward to the LCS matches this upcoming week. And again, those standings are still being worked on because we do still have some matches tonight, like the one happening between Liquid and Golden Guardians right now. That could end up moving Golden Guardians past Liquid, potentially, depending how that result goes. But that is to be determined for Monday Night League. But what is not to be determined is the schedule ahead for next week. John, we have the LCS schedule set in hand. What is the match you are looking most forward to?
Not only is it a classic matchup of two storied organizations, but it's also a matchup of 1-2. And of course, I'm talking about on Saturday, February 15th, 6 p.m. Eastern, time adjusted for your time zone, if you will. Cloud9 versus TSM. Cloud9 in first place, TSM in a solid second place. Will Cloud9 continue to go 2-0 like they've been doing every week so far? Or will TSM be able to hand Cloud9 their first loss of the split? I think it's going to be a spicy one. There's a lot of history between these two teams. Cloud9 has struggled against TSM, regardless of how well they have played. TSM usually always pulls ahead early in the early game. Mid game, Cloud9 makes some gutsy calls, kind of pulls it back a little bit. Then there's a whole clown fiesta towards the late mid, late game, and then TSM usually pulls it off. Now, if we were talking about playoffs in the Gauntlet, which doesn't exist anymore, then I would take Cloud9 all day, every day. But Cloud9 right now still playing pretty good Blabber. Statistically speaking, one of the best junglers currently in League of Legends. Now, does that mean jungle is OP or is it still trash tier? No, jungle's still garbage. But he's still playing incredibly well for how bad the jungle meta currently is. So I like Cloud9 in this matchup, but it's going to be a very, very good matchup if you're a fan of two storied organizations going head-to-head. And with first and second place teams going at it too, Cloud9 TSM on the 15th is your match to watch.
Absolutely. And John, I think that does it for this week. Again, a lot of exciting action. You have the Overwatch League homestand in Philadelphia. Of course, you get more LEC and LCS action, as well as the Caps Gaming Showcase for Chell players and fans alike. Lots and lots of exciting stuff up ahead for this weekend.
Please wait while I load the music. This is great. Absolute disaster. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, there are other ways for you to interact with us and the show. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, you can find us streaming regularly on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live. Catch this podcast Monday nights around 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, as John said, adjust to those time zones. We're excited to do this as well as plenty of other content on the Twitch channel. Check us out.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.